Hey, welcome to the Upland Nation podcast. Scott Linden here, your host. Looking forward to talking with you, and I mean literally to you. Taking a lot of phone calls this time around, all on the same topic. I don't think you'll mind. Puppies. Yeah, it's puppy season, and if you're waiting for one, or you just got one, or you're sending some off to their new forever homes, probably have something for you today in the podcast. We got a lot of phone calls from folks who are kind of experiencing the puppy thing right now, and then a whole bunch of pros who know what they're talking about when it comes to getting a dog off on the right feet. So stick around for all of that. Outfitted by Cabela's, we'll also have a public access do-it-yourself hunting tip, a dog handling tip, some adventures and strategies, tips and tactics, advice and insights. It's all right here on the Upland Nation podcast. Oh my. Well, here in the West, our leash is getting longer by the week. Most of the governors are letting us actually exercise some of our civil liberties, including the chance to gather with friends of like mind. Our NAVDA chapter is starting up. We got a training day, and then soon after we have a natural ability and a utility test on the same weekend. That ought to be interesting. We're allowed to travel a lot more than some people. If you haven't read yet, Canada's still imposing that ban on any non-essential travel to their country. So if you're looking at Canada for this fall, keep an eye on the news out of there. If you're like me, you're developing a few Plan B trips just in case. I just made another itinerary that keeps me within 150 miles of home the whole time. And looking forward to it. Again, a whole bunch of new places, wild birds, and hopefully some interesting times. All right, we're about ready to get rolling with some callers, but first off, a couple quick messages. SageandBreaker.com is our gun care product sponsor. They make gun care products crafted at the highest caliber. Always free shipping. Sign up, you'll get their catalog. You'll be on the mailing list. That way, before everybody else like me finds out about it, you'll get advance notice on the new items. So SageandBreaker.com. And Dogtra.com, where you can learn all about their bundles, their savings, their freebies, their added value stuff. It's all at Dogtra.com. You can also learn why I love their TNB dual collar system so much. And our first caller is from somewhere where it's really humid. I'll call it sultry. Billy, welcome to the podcast. How are you holding up down there?
Not bad. It's been pretty bad for a few days, but it's not too bad right now.
That's good. And whereabouts are you now?
I live just out of Fort Smith, Arkansas, yeah.
Okay. It could be worse. You could be in New Orleans.
Yeah, that would be worse.
hey, no offense to New Orleanians. I don't mean no, that. I mean friends. Just the weather.
I got friends down there, yeah.
I'll never forget. Well, I will. In fact, I forgot most of what I did the last time I was down there, but that's a story for another day.
Yeah.
It could be a Jimmy Buffett song. Mm-hmm. So today we're talking puppies, and you've been around the block a few times on this whole thing. What's the status of your puppy situation?
Right now I just got one litter, and it looks like I got about all of them sold. I think I got three males left out of this litter, and I got another one in a couple of weeks. I usually don't have but last year I didn't have any, so I just try to keep some young dogs coming up. You never know. Nice. Always have to prepared for the future.
we're all lobbying all the time for one more dog.
Yeah.
Well, what kind of dogs are you breeding these days?
I have English Pointers.
That's right. Sure.
A lot of LU bloodlines.
Nice. So where are you finding those puppies going? Are they going to hardcore hunters?
Most of them are, and there's some field trial people that buy some. I've got some in New York, and I can't even remember all the places they went now. Florida, all over the country. California, there's a lot of them buying for hunting, and some people just buy them for pets,
Yeah, I'll never figure that one out, but what do I know?
No, I don't either. Yeah.
Well, when you're sending a puppy off, you've obviously had some conversations with the new owner before that. But is there any parting advice you give these people when you're literally or figuratively handing that puppy to them?
Yeah, they're not a machine. Is usually what I tell them.
Yeah.
A lot of people, you know, this, you know, they're a living, breathing animal.
That's,
I like to see somebody to take care of them, you know.
Yeah, and you're, you know, you've been around the block. You know what that means. But some of us, you know, we're always looking for, you know, more clarification in that area. So
yeah.
Well, how does that practically manifest itself in puppy management?
You know, I just tell everybody, you know, pretty much, you know, that just treat them like they're one of your kids is what I do, you know.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. And most people do that I hear from, you know. A lot of people tell you they'll keep in touch and tell you they'll send you pictures. You know, it's like getting pictures from your kids when people respond back to you and send you pictures of them later on or your grandkids. But, you know, some people do and some people don't. But I've made a lot of friends, you know, over the years selling puppies to people. You know, I keep in touch with, probably half of them or more probably.
Nice.
You know, people see them in gifts and we're just like family with some of them. You know, I talk to some of them about every day, you know.
Wow. Is there a particular age that you like to send them off?
Well, I usually send them off not till they're at least 8 weeks old.
Mm-hmm. That's
usually what I, you know, the.
What happens in that time between day 49, 7 weeks, and the next week that makes you strongly believe that?
I think you could even send them sooner. A lot of people think you should keep them till they're older, but, you know, 8 weeks is what most people prefer nowadays. So that's usually when I wait for them to pick them up, the dog. I usually have them off their mom for at least a week or two, but at the end, you know,
sure.
As soon as they get where they can eat, there, you know, I don't want to drag her down too much, especially if you got a big litter. If you leave them on too much, you know, it pulls the female down real bad, you know.
Oh,
one litter, I had 14 pups, so I didn't want to. I wanted them as soon as I could, you know.
You know, that is the second 14 puppy litter story I've heard in the last 24 hours. Wow.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't have that many this time.
Yeah. I mean, what do you do with that many? Because as you well know, they're just not enough feeding stations.
Yeah, well, they made out pretty good. Well, actually, two of them died right after birth, and mm-hmm. She raised 12, but they all growed out really good. You know, they just fight for a spot to eat. You know, they take turns, you know.
Yeah, I guess
they did pretty good. They all was healthy and fat. And
that's what matters. Well, fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, good luck, and glad to hear all is going well with you. Stay cool out there. It's almost fall. It's all we can do to keep our minds off this kind of weather. Billy, always great to talk with you. Glad you could join us on the Upland Nation podcast. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
All right, our next caller is probably the only the only guy you'll talk to today or listen to today who's seen mountain goats, bighorn sheep, elk, moose, deer of two species, and who knows what else. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And that all happened like turkey season, right?
Yeah, it's probably a few places on earth you can turkey hunt and see bighorn sheep and mountain goats in the same day. So it's always an adventure.
Oh, yeah. You know, especially when you're dozing off and the mountain lion stops by to say hello. But we're talking puppies today because why not? I mean, what a dumb question. And so we're, you know, so tell me, how are you feeling these days and why are you feeling that way about puppies?
Oh, well, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time. And I remember the first gentleman who breeder trainer I got my dogs from, he was really good about sharing his knowledge, and he counseled me immediately. Almost, he said, you know, you got a great dog here, and of course it was one of his dogs, but it was a great dog. And he said, but you know, you've got to look at the fact that if this is what you like to do, which clearly it is, he said, then you need to understand, you need to keep a string of dogs, you need to keep them staggered in age. And that's, I followed his advice ever since then. And so the neat thing is, you know, for me anyway, not to get too emotional about it, but the neat part is you see one of your dogs fading and you've got all those memories, you get that counterbalance of the excitement of a new puppy.
Yeah.
And the possibilities in the future, and it just, you know, it gets the juices flowing again. And that's why I get excited. This will be my seventh puppy in the last 30 years.
So you're an old hand at this. Let's see, 7 divided by 30. That's about every 5 years, 4.5 yeah. years. You're the accountant, yeah. I think. But anyway, it's pretty frequent. So Mark is the poster boy for the saying, how many dogs is enough? One more. And you're what kind of dog are you getting, and where are you getting it?
I'm getting another English setter, field bred, you know, registered American field dog stud book, and I'm getting it from Tacoma Mountain Kennels. I was fortunate enough to get after the first breeder trainer sort of, unfortunately I had health problems, got out of the business, I got pointed in the right direction to a really great trainer in Baker City after that, and or Baker City area. Am I allowed to mention more names?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we probably know him. Yeah.
Well, it was Mike McGinnis, and Mike McGinnis, and before that, his dad had trained a string of outstanding bird dogs. He didn't actually have a kennel; he was just a trainer. He has had a little spread over, and it still does, over in the Powder River Basin over by Baker City out towards Medical Springs. But anyhow, as my first dog was getting older and I couldn't go, and I had a son of my first dog, a breeder trainer, had used my dog for stud. So I had no kennels. I mean, I just had glommed onto this guy out of Coos Bay. And anyhow, I asked him, what should I get next? Or what, you know, kennel, give me some advice. Because he was training all sorts of dogs. Just getting dogs in the nationals and all that other kind of stuff. But he told me you need to get a dog from Tacoma Mountain Kennels and make sure the sire is Tacoma Mountain Patriot, which his call name was Jack. And so I did, and I became friends with the kennel owner and actually hunting partners too. And I've been getting dogs from him ever since. So, I've got dogs that, and this, you know, breeding is always a fickle thing, but the two dogs I have right now, because I haven't picked the pup up yet, between them, the sires are running the nationals 10 times or 8 times or something like that. Not as successful as Shadow Bow Oak or Shadow Oak Bow or whatever his name was. No disrespect intended. I just always get them mixed up. But, you know, it gives you some, I don't know if it's peace of mind, but it gives you some sense that you're pointed in the right direction.
Yeah. So. And there's a lesson in that. Absolutely. Finding a good kennel and a breeder that you can trust for all sorts of reasons. It has a track record and that sort of thing. It's probably the most common advice I hear from other professionals in that world. And unfortunately, a lot of people look at price and price alone, and unfortunately, and that ends up being an issue. Go ahead.
Let me interject for them. The price, you know, people get, you know, whatever you pay for a pup is insignificant compared to everything after that.
And, I agree.
You know, and I just, it's sort of like guys that buy $10,000 shotguns and then buy bargain basement ammunition for hunting. I just don't get it, quite frankly. But anyhow.
Yeah. Sorry. What do they call that? False economy.
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Nose to spite your face, whatever. So what are you going to do? The pup's going to arrive, and I think is it flying? No, it's close enough. You're going to go get it.
I have already have visitation rights, so I'm going to go over and see him on Saturday.
And so what are you doing Saturday? What is your objective with Saturday?
Just go. They're only 7 weeks old right now. Just go see the pup. Just get a sense of his budding personality. And that's an important thing. Anybody who is listening to this that is contemplating getting their first dog, or even for that matter, their second or third dog, particularly, I'd almost say their second dog, and that would be is that every one of them is different. They're all individuals, and your job as a handler, because I'm first one to admit I'm not a trainer in any way, shape, or form, but your job as a handler is to figure out how to put that dog in a position to succeed. So if you're, you know, some of the dogs I've had have been, you know, the classic big running all age dogs. I'm a bit strange that way because even though I hunt on foot instead of horseback, I like big running all age dogs for chukar hunting. Mm-hmm. But I've had big running all age dogs, and then the next dog was kind of a 200-yard dog, 100-yard dog, and you know, you hunt them differently than you do the big running dog, and they have different personalities. And you know, I'll be the first one to admit, sometimes the big running dogs are as hard-headed as granite, and sometimes it's the opposite. But generally, you just have to try and pick up a sense of what the dog is like. I've had dogs that were so sensitive that if I yelled at one of the other dogs or talked too loudly, my sensitive dog would get upset. So you just, you know, he'd run up to me to try and make up to me. It's like, he's not, you know, you're not the one who's not getting in his kennel, for goodness sakes.
But I love it.
Again, every dog is an individual, and you've got to try and assess what that is and figure out what the best way is to hunt them. Now, we've talked before in other podcasts, I'm a multi-species guy. I start the year off with grouse, and then move right into what I call the normal upland, which is chukar, huns, quail, and pheasants. And the grouse and the pheasants kind of hunt about the same. You've got this is much, you know, sort of like flying hunting elk, only harder. And but I've had dogs that the personalities fit certain species better. And if you have multiple dogs and you can get a sense of that, you can say, okay, this dog, we're going to chukar hunt him today, and tomorrow we're going to switch to grouse. We're going to do more pheasant hunting tomorrow, because sure, this dog's more tuned to that. I'm very fortunate to have been able to do that.
I love it. Well, I sure love your idea of kind of reading the dog and keeping your expectations where that dog in its development is. And reminds me of a country song I promise not to sing to you the next time we get together. good advice and good luck with the puppy. I can't wait to see more pictures. Keep us posted, Mark. Thanks for being part of the Upland Nation podcast.
Thanks for having me. Have a good day.
Oh, I can't wait. It's been a long time since this gentleman and I have had a chance to talk. Dr. Howard Meyer, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Scott.
You, just by way of introduction, I'll keep it brief because we do want to talk about puppies, but you know a little bit about genetics, and I'm just being polite here. You're an expert in that world, and out of the Oregon State University, but you're also a bird dog guy and a bird hunter. What else can you tell us about yourself that we should know?
Oh, I guess I'm an avid outdoors person, particularly a bow hunter. I been to Africa 4 times and was planning to go again in August, but of course, with the COVID, that has that been a kibosh on that. But I'm active in lots of outdoor things, member of a lot of the outdoor organizations.
But your genetic background is why I first thought of you with this. What did you do at OSU?
Well, I was on the faculty at OSU for 25 years. I taught animal breeding and genetics. I did research there during that time. My research animal, my animals were sheep, particularly looking at reproductive characteristics and the genetics of reproductive components and how they lead to the improvement in overall profitability.
I get it. And frankly, I'm surprised we hadn't crossed paths sooner. You know, I did a lot of consulting for the Sheep Producers Council back in the day in another life, but we'll talk about that off the air sometime. But you, among few, have a unique perspective with this combination of academic background and then your love particularly for short hairs. If you were to give some advice to listeners about choosing a puppy, perhaps from a slightly scientific perspective, what's some of the advice you would offer up?
Well, I guess I'd offer the same advice as I'd offer to a cattle producer or a sheep producer, anyone who makes a living with animals. And that is first sort of a sequence of decisions to be made. The first decision is to make decide what breed you want. Secondly, pick a breeder. And then certainly go and visit dogs at that breeder. And the last decision you make is actually picking a pup from within a litter. I think a lot of people go about this process just the opposite direction. They hear somebody's got pups, they go look at puppies, and they get excited about a puppy. They find one that they think is cute, and that becomes their hunting dog for the next 8 or 10 years, good, bad, or otherwise.
What is the risk when you do it that way? Is it that it's not a personality match, or is it something bigger than that?
Well, I think you need to decide what you're looking for in the first place. You know, if you're looking for a first-rate hunting dog, then you need to go to somebody who has hunting dogs rather than people who just participate in the show ring. I think the mistake a lot of people make is that they don't know what it is they're looking for. They don't do their homework. They don't talk to a number of breeders. I get a lot of calls from people who are starting out the sort of the right way, and they ask me, first off, you breed short hairs, so why do you breed short hairs? What is it about short hairs? And they probably, hopefully, they say the same thing to a poodle pointer breeder or a wire hair breeder. And they get perspective from breeders, probably biased, but nevertheless, they get perspectives from the different breeds, and they can decide which breed best suits them.
That makes more sense when I hear it than when I'm down amongst a litter of puppies. And by the way, everybody, you're listening to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden, your host. That's Dr. Howard Meyer. Howard, have you got any puppies on the ground right now?
No, I do not. We took a break for the past year. I do have two litters planned. I'll be running my two young bitches in their NAVDA utility tests in August, and then breeding them at their first heat following that.
And so you've decided, why is that a good time, besides being in heat, of course? Why is that the better time to breed than 2 years from now or last month?
Well, it's important to me that I run my dogs in the utility test. I expect they will do very well. It's sort of fitting my schedule, so that I will then worry about producing puppies after I have the summer training out of the way. You don't really have that much choice in terms of when you produce puppies.
Mm-hmm.
Bitches come in heat every 6 to 8, maybe 9 months. People make the mistake, of course, deciding at short notice that they want a puppy, rather than doing their homework, like I say, and putting a deposit down in advance. We've had deposits up to 3 years in advance from people who knew their dog in 3 years' time they would need a replacement for their current dog.
Plan ahead. Sounds good to me. I'm still arguing about that here at home, but that's my problem, not yours. So if you were going to give any advice to somebody as they are embarking on the puppy shopping, the puppy pickup process. So they're coming to take home a dog. By the time they show up, you all have probably decided which of those dogs they're going to take. What's your parting advice to them?
Well, I guess the question I often get is people say, well, when do I start training my pup? And my response is that you start training your puppy the day you get it home. You start teaching it what the rules are. You want it to be, a good citizen. So right from the outset, you have to know yourself what it is that you are going to allow and not allow. And you impose that right at the outset. Some people have, it's fun when you've got a puppy to have it jumping up on you and playing and racing around and tugging and on a rope or something. But then when the puppy starts getting older, I say to people, well, do you want that puppy jumping up on you when it's 6 months old and it weighs 40 pounds and it's got its feet covered in mud? And they say, well, no, of course not. And then I say, well, is it fair to change the rules on the dog? So that's really what you'd be doing, is, you know, allowing something now. But then as it starts getting older, then you change the rules. And it's just so much easier to start out with an idea of what it is you want to mold that dog into. And you just gently turn it into the dog that you want. So I guess another piece of advice I would make is try to avoid future problems. And when I say that, the couple of those problems that are very difficult to solve in older dogs are hard mouth,
mm-hmm.
and that often comes about because they've been playing with the dog, playing tug of war, letting the dog chomp and chew on anything and everything. And the other one is dogs that are gun-shy. Somehow people think that, you know, when they start training their dog, that's when it's supposed to teach the dog not to be worried about loud noises. Well, that is, you know, they should have started that from the outset. When we have puppies, we have a radio going from the time they're born, radio going, making lots of noise. When it's feeding time, we're deliberately dropping metal pans on the floor around them. And they just come to totally ignore all that noise. And so by the time they go home at 7 weeks, they're well started on not being worried about loud noises, such as eventually gunfire. But it's up to the new owners to continue that. And just a little common sense, it's not a particular effort at all. But it avoids a major potential problem that could leave a dog virtually worthless.
Well, I am so glad to hear that from somebody with way more credentials than me. I'm a big believer in all of that. And just this past weekend saw the opposite and almost had to bite my tongue not to make any comments. But you know me, I'm going to say what I feel. So I did. Well, Howard, it's great to talk with you again. I bet I'll see you at that utility test. Good luck on it. I know you're working hard already towards it. It's almost here. Thanks so much for being a part of the Upland Nation podcast.
Sure. Anytime, Scott.
And don't you go away. We've got lots more to come. The Handle It segment, where I teach you a little bit about what I learned. Hopefully it'll help you. And then a whole bunch more calls and expert advice on all things puppy. But first, a quick reminder about Dr. Tim's Performance Dog Food, DRTIMS.com. You know, I love that food for a whole bunch of reasons. Number one, it comes in much bigger bags than those other brands. So when you buy, you're getting great value. You know, if you work it out on a per pound basis, it's pretty darn good. And you can get it in all sorts of places, including Target now. But I'd rather you buy it direct and have it shipped right to your door through drtims.com. That way you'll get 30% off your first order. Just use the code UPLANDNATION. Now, Dr. Tim Hunt and I were talking a while back about all the great things that I like and he likes about that food when he formulated it. One of the things that's very important to him and probably to you is he knows exactly where every single ingredient came from, and he will tell you on the website. So just scroll down and get to the ingredient list and then click on the ingredient and you will find out what ocean, what pasture, and what hatchery everything came from. It's all at drtims.com. And my friend Jack Homa at Electronic Shooters Protection wants to remind you that no matter what kind of a budget you have, you can find electronic hearing protection that will meet it. They have 6 different models of custom-fitted hearing protection devices at espamerica.com. Browse your way through all of those. They're all custom-fitted. For me, I've been dialing in my shooting for a long, long time, and believe me, if it weren't for hearing protection from ESP, I'd probably be shooting even worse because I'd be flinching more. Total coverage, 100% coverage, 100% custom. I wear mine on the range and in the field. As promised, here's your Handle It segment. And I apologize if I keep talking about Flick. In fact, this time, I'm going to talk about you. In a recent survey from my weekly newsletter, I asked everybody how many felt that their dog was finished to whatever level they define finished. I was a little disappointed. 6% of you agreed with that. Only 6. That means 94% of you are unhappy with the development of your dog to this point. I hope that means you're working on it this summer, and I wish you the best of luck. I'm always working on it here, and that's why we're here every week doing this, talking about it. And so a little bit of advice on that. First off, doesn't need to take a long time. I've been working Flick, you know, 2 or 3 short periods every day. Some of the research tells us that's really all a dog wants to absorb anyway. But more importantly, join a club. Find your local NABDA chapter or NASTRA chapter or anything else and get involved. That in itself will provide an incentive, especially if you plan to test in that organization. Testing is a great reason to train. Find a friend. Find 2 or 3 friends. Form a little training group. Again, it's just like going to the gym, you know. It's a little bit easier if you know somebody else is going to be there and they're going to be kind of keeping an eye on you. Make sure you stick to the routine. And finally, however you have to do it, get some birds. The cost of a few training pigeons, even if they fly away back to whoever raised them, is low compared to a crappy hunting trip that resulted from a poorly trained dog. So all baby steps, get involved, look for some help from all your friends, new and old. Good luck. Now let's get back to the calls. And on the line with me now from all the way over in New Jersey, Steve Del Rossi. He's got Quail Hollow Kennels. And Steve, I'm not going to hold it against you. You're big on the Brittany thing, right?
Absolutely, positively.
Okay, so tell me, number one, why you picked Brittany's?
Well, when I started out, I was just a trainer, and I just realized, to me, out here with the dogs I had to deal with, it's just a tool for a job. They fit the covers. I'm more concerned about a dog hunting east and west than north and south, and I think retrieving is as much as important as pointing is with a dog, and Brittany's just seem to have... It's just natural. They're very easy, very biddable, and they're the perfect house dog also. And business-wise, if you look at it that way, they need smaller kennels. You can put 2 in a kennel, and it just keeps peace that way.
A little pocket rockets.
Well, yeah, but like you said, everything's a tool for the job. Yeah. If I'm down in Oklahoma, I'd want an English Pointer. If I'm here in my neck of the woods, I want one of my Brittany's. So.
And you're hunting roughies and woodcock a lot over there?
90% grouse, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm at 90% woodcock, I'm sorry. The grouse is my personal stuff, Pennsylvania, Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire. But right here, Chesapeake, the Delaware Bay, Delaware, Maryland, New Jersey, it's woodcock. And right in the middle of the season, November, December, just perfect times. We have nice, cool seasons. We don't have to worry about the hot weather. Like, I've been in Maine and New Brunswick and dying up there in 80 degrees in late September, early October.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah, that's a risk with our prairie grouse out here as well. It opens early and you want to go then, but it's still summer.
Yeah. And there's a reason. Hunting's a cool weather sport. I can't get it through everybody's head. Dogs just do a lot better in cold weather. That's just all there is to it.
No
and
doubt.
I've always thought it. You need 2 killing frosts seem to make the difference for a dog. Once you get that, they're fine. But in the beginning, even if the temperature drops, but if you haven't had that killing frost yet, they still can't smell. I always tell people to lay on their belly and crawl through the weeds and see what you smell and feel what you smell. And it's just same thing with a dog has to run through. Sure, an older dog has it figured out, but young dogs, they don't smell them. That's just all there is to it. They just don't smell them.
Well, I've never heard that, but it starts to ring true just based on what little I know about my experiences in warmer weather. You know, I can see that. Well, thanks for that advice. But yeah, enough.
Grandpa always said, the higher the sky, the higher the scent, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
If you got the beautiful, that scent just goes straight up as opposed to being down on the ground.
Yeah.
Humidity and cloud cover. And school bus time, the first 2 hours in the morning, the first 2 hours in the afternoon. And That's if you only have 4 hours a day to hunt, they're the best times to hunt.
Love it.
To find good bird dogs to do it.
Well, we're talking puppies, all things puppies, from shopping to buying to training to raising to breeding and all of that. You got any pups on the ground right now?
We pretty much always do. There's just always a waiting list, and I think that works well. But with this pandemic here on the East Coast, there was a lot of – I've had more calls than I've ever had, but I had the same kind of bump after 9/11 because puppies are hearth and home. Mom's apple pie, the American way, but there's always a waiting list. People just don't understand that. Good quality dogs you got to wait for. There's not a puppy machine where you punch numbers in and they roll down. And you pick them out like a Coke bottle. That just doesn't happen.
So what is the first thing you ask a prospective puppy buyer when they call? What do you want to know about a potential customer?
Well, I really try to feel, how much are they really going to hunt? Not that that's a bad thing, because a person can just hunt every Saturday and enjoy his dog the same way as a guide buying one of my dogs where it's going to hunt 6 days a week. It's usually just how much they really know, because that's the true problem with puppies, because I really don't believe there's a pick in the litter, because your pick isn't my pick. Isn't someone else's pick that comes in the driveway. It's such a personal choice, and just their knowledge, because this is the only business where our success relies on the dedication and knowledge of the customers we sell our product to. If they don't do it, the dog's not going to get trained and not going to get better.
Yeah, you're right. I never thought about it quite that way. But, you can sell a car to any schmo because all he has to do is point it in the right direction and press his right foot down.
Dogs, you can't. You got to know what you're doing, or at least be close enough to me. That's why I always try, not buying my Brittany's, but whatever breed you're buying, you always want to buy from a breeder trainer. So you have that other aspect of the game. The guy's also a trainer. So you go back to him. If you don't want to do the monthly bit, you go for hour lessons. And it just seems to work out a lot better that way. I always have birds. I have plenty of my own land. And of course, 5 months a year, we have woodcock. And it just rolls like that. You got to get somebody close that does everything. And of course, a breeder trainer, we live in a country. So we can start shooting the guns over those dogs right away. As soon as my dogs go outside out of the kennel building, 5 weeks old, we start with the blank guns. Because if mom doesn't care, the puppies don't care. It's a simple process. And then before you know it, they don't care about the gun at all. They'll just sit there and eat and go to sleep.
If you were to narrow it down to the biggest mistakes that puppy buyers make, maybe not yours because you're so thorough about that, but you see a lot of this, and for all I know, you do repair jobs on other people's puppies.
That's a good way to put it.
What is the most common version of that you have to do?
I would think most people take the boldest puppy, and I try to push people. If there's a female puppy that obviously is bolder, bossier, dominant, you don't want that dog. You run away from that dog. That's a dog that you and I should keep, a pro. Because it's 7-8 weeks, that's a tough animal to deal with. I always tell people just stay right in the middle. And they always have to consider what time of the day you see the puppies, because they're different at different times of the day. If you come first thing in the morning when we feed them, you won't want any of them during a feeding frenzy. And then middle of the day is different, and at nighttime you get that power surge about an hour before dark where they all go crazy again. And puppies also have a natural, I call it the quiet time, about 8 o'clock to 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. They basically just don't do anything anyway, and then they're nice and peaceful that way. I've always said to judge a litter, you should go three different times of the day, and then you really start seeing things.
Well, a previous caller alluded to this similar idea. He's going regularly to take a look at the litter that he's buying from. And I never thought about that. The more you go, the more often you'll see a different aspect of a dog's character.
And then, of course, if you go three different times, you're going to pick three different dogs.
Is any validity to the idea that you just sit down and let the puppy pick you?
Well, I was just going to add that. Most puppies are picked out by grandkids. So, and those guys are just as happy. So. Yeah. But how about the puppy I send you in the airplane? You're just as happy as the person that comes four times and sees them. And just, you got to train these dogs. People just don't understand. It all boils down to training. I believe that more than anything. Because I always make the analogy, how many million-dollar racehorse colts end up being $1,000 riding horses in a year? And no animal on this earth is more well-bred than racehorses. And they all don't make it to the track.
No, I don't make it. I know from personal from personal experience all about that, but that's
and I went that way too.
So if you know if you had to insist that your new puppy buyers did one thing in the way of what I'll loosely call training more than they really do, what would that be?
I would say if you don't have 10 minutes a day to train a dog, don't get involved in the buy a puppy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not talking about the kids zone, having them eat Cheerios. I'm actually training. And 12, 13, 14 weeks old, sign that dog up for obedience classes. There's always someone around where you live to take the dog to obedience class. And
yeah.
If the obedience is done that first 4, 5, 6 months, the bird dog stuff will come. It'll just fall in. And then that's my fault. Once you teach your dog to whoa or sit, stay, and come, everything else will fall into place.
Words to the wise, everybody, from a guy who knows of what he speaks. That's Steve Del Rossi, Quail Hollow Kennel. What's your website address, Steve?
www.quailhollowkennel.com.
There you go.
Or
hey.
Of course, Facebook. Yep.
All of the above. All right.
Yes, sir.
Hey, pleasure speaking with you. Thanks for being a part of the Upland Nation podcast.
Hope to do it again. Thank you.
Okay, you've seen him probably somewhere around at maybe a NAVDO organizational meeting of some sort or at the Pheasant Fest where I met him first. Ed Erickson with Autumn Breeze Kennel. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Scott. Thank you for inviting me.
It's good to talk with you again. We just don't see enough of each other.
Well, I hear you. It's like you say, it's always a national event and it's always time goes by too fast.
So here we are, and we're talking puppies, and this will be the first of many conversations we'll have on the Upland Nation podcast in the next few years, I promise you. So if you see my number show up in your phone, you can decide whether to answer or not. But
well, I'll answer.
You got puppies on the ground?
Yes, I do. Right now I have a litter of 8, and they're 7 weeks old.
And what's the breed?
German Shorthairs.
And if you were to describe the ideal puppy buyer who is going to walk into your front door next week and take one of them home, how would what kind of a mindset would that person have?
Basically, my clients that are buying puppies are family man, 2 or 3 kids, got them in sports. They want a bird dog that they're going to hunt occasionally, but it's going to be more of a pet. And I tell them, these dogs will settle down in the house, drop the tailgate, and they'll go hunting for you. That's my average client.
You said a couple things there that, for my own reasons, I also agree with, but the whole idea of having children and being in organized sports, where does that all fit into a puppy buyer's mental outlook?
Well, they're looking at cost, how much time they can spend with the dog, because the kids take up a lot of time. I pretty much tell them, if you don't screw up the gun proofing, these dogs will do what you want.
And you use the term gun proofing. We've heard other terms tonight and in other podcasts as well. How do you go about, I don't need the whole tutorial, we'd be here till tomorrow morning, but what are the most important aspects of that gun proofing with a very young dog?
Well, and I start, these puppies will see pigeons this weekend, and they'll all be chasing 2 or 3 pigeons, and I'll start shooting a blank pistol. I tell everybody, take the puppy home, start clapping 2 pieces of 2x4 together to get them acclimated to loud noises. But I personally like to have them on a bird and introduce cap pistol, blank pistol, and move up.
Oh, good. That sounds so good, especially compared to what I saw this weekend, but I won't go on. I won't go down that rabbit hole tonight. If you were to narrow it down, Ed, to one important training, the priority for puppy training, and we all know training with puppies is a relative term. What are the important things that a new owner needs to start working on the day that puppy gets home?
I tell them good socialization. I like a recall and I use a lot of treats. And don't overdo your play retrieve with these pointing dogs because they'll get bored. But socialization, expose them to all kinds of noises, people, different scenarios. I get so many dogs in for training that are just spooky and scared because they haven't been socialized properly.
Are there particular things? Yeah, I've been through this. I'm on my fifth wire hair. My fourth one needed a lot of that. In fact, it was almost a remedial situation with him for who knows what reason. But are there particular situations that are really good for socializing a puppy?
I tell people, take them to the ballpark, soccer games, all that kind of outdoor activity where there's a lot of people, there people are going to want to pet them. A lot of commotion. As long as you have them on a leash, you're good.
Big crowds, well, larger groups, love it. That's that probably takes a lot, you know, covers a lot of ground real fast.
Yes. You know, and start introducing them to water early. You know, you can just walk through puddles. That's the other big thing. These versatile gun dogs, I don't like getting wet feet, so they should be swimming when you shoot a bird going across a pond, you know.
I can't argue that, but how do you get them started on that past the puddle stage?
Well, the kiddie swimming pools, I don't do that. A lot of people put them in their bathtub before they go home and have them just wading in water.
Sure.
I'm pretty good on my dogs. I mean, it's I don't have any issue with what I'm breeding, but it's, you know, just – the kids, if you got young kids, go to the lake, that puppy will follow those kids right in.
You probably know Bob Ferris, poodle pointer
guy. I've never met him, okay. But I know who he is.
He had an interesting way to do this with young dogs. He would carry the dog out into swimming depth water and then gently help the dog get floating, and then that dog wants to get out of the water ASAP, so he swims back to shore.
Yep. And I've done that a lot with some of these dogs that are real spooky, but good for puppies. And then when they get to shore, they get a treat, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I have, when I have healthier young dogs, wade out with waders and gently bring the puppy out with a lead, give them a treat when they get to you, they'll turn around and go back. There's all kinds of little tricks.
Love it. If you were to have everybody come to pick up their puppy at the right day, what day is that?
Well, the old wives' tale or whatever, they say the 49th day, but I've changed my philosophy over 22 years of breeding short hairs that I go to the 8 weeks. It just seems like they're more well-adjusted, and it gives me more time, another extra week with them. Bird exposure, and I can kind of pick out which one's the dominant one. I just think that 8 week number seems to be a better thing nowadays.
Do you match a dog to a customer, or do you just let them close their eyes and reach into the pen and pull one out?
Reach in and pull one out. You better take the one you want to look at for the next 14 years.
So there is some validity to the color.
Yes. And with the good breeding that's going on nowadays, you don't have to worry about getting a bad dog if you go to a reputable breeder. You know, everyone's done their research, done their homework. If you go to a good breeder, you're going to get a quality dog. Just pick the one that you are going to look at for 14 years.
Oh, my. Yeah, now you're getting too serious on us. That's a long commitment.
Well, let's hope they live that long, 12 to 14 years.
We always hope that, that's for sure. Yep. That's great. Is there anything in particular that you wish we puppy buyers would not do when we bring that dog home?
Try and gun-proof it themselves.
Oh!
Unless they really know what they're doing. I've had more gun-sensitive dogs show up than you can believe because of going to the trap range and leaving them in the truck and everything that they shouldn't do, they're doing it, you know?
Yeah, I do know.
But that always scares me, you know? It's like, if you just get through the gun proofing, these dogs are going to be perfect. You know, they're going to do what you want. But so many people screw it up, and then they want me to fix it. You know, and that's a 50-50 chance, basically, what I've seen over the years.
Okay, well, that's a reality check for us right there, and that sounds about right from my more direct experience. So be careful on the gun proofing. Absolutely. What is it about having a litter of puppies you like so much, Ed?
Oh, I guess the bottom line is I'm going to send a puppy home and somebody's going to enjoy this dog for 10 to 12, 14 years. And I'm giving them pleasure. I know that I'm producing good quality dogs, and I'm always trying to make and improve on the breed when I'm doing a breeding. And I don't keep a pup out of every litter. It's just I have clients that are coming back after years, and they know they're going to get a quality pup, and I'm trying to improve on the breeding. But I'm going to bring them pleasure, especially a lot of them. We got kids that are 10 years old, 11 years old. They're going to experience their first hunting seasons over a good dog, and that's a joy I get out of it.
I love it. And on that note, I will say thank you very much to give us more incentive than ever to go out and buy another puppy, because everybody will benefit, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, good. Ed Erickson, Autumn Breeze Kennel, always fun to talk with you. We'll do it again sometime soon. Thanks a bunch for being a part of the Upland Nation podcast.
All right. Thank you for having me, Scott. It's a pleasure.
And way over there in, let's just call it the Southwest, because Lance Larson is joining me. Lance, a master carver. You've seen his work on Facebook, among other places. At least I did. And Lance, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Scott.
And we're talking puppies today, whenever people are listening. I guess I got to be more careful about that. What's your most recent puppy experience?
Well, my 75-pound puppy is now in my lap just as we started talking. So,
ow.
three-year-old puppy. But my most recent one is my 3-year-old. But what I find with puppies is just over the years of having Weimer runners is I don't think, yeah, they can tear into stuff. They can get destructive. I don't think it's really on them that they're trying to be, but everything that my dogs seem to get into seems to have a heavy scent of me, be it a shoe, be it a t-shirt, be it a pillow off the bed or something. And I really think that when they're young, they don't know better they're going to chew, but as they get older, mine still pull stuff down and lay it in front of the front door and just lay on it and wait for me sometimes.
Well,
so I think a lot of stuff they destroy is just because it's a scent of you, the leader of the pack.
We're still living with that too, and mine's the same age as yours, and I always kind of knew it was the stink of me on that stuff, but I prefer to think that they're not shredding it to bits because they want to eat me.
You gotta hope not.
Yeah, but I'm sure there's some truth to your theory, Lance. And a 3-year-old puppy is still a puppy, especially our German dogs. That's for sure. So when you were bringing your younger Weim along early on, what are the biggest challenges you had with that dog?
Well, with this one, he took a long time to crate train to be trusted in the house. He was one of the quickest I ever had to be housebroken, but to be crate trained and to be trusted, it took him till he was 2 years.
Wow.
I tried it a year and he got in there, and after a day he decided to destroy something. I tried it a year and a half and it went about a week, then he destroyed something, and finally at 2 years now he hasn't done anything.
Well,
you know, when he got to 2 years I could do it.
I know exactly how you feel. We're still at that stage with mine as well. He's pretty good, except when both the cats are in the house, then it's Katie bar the door. you think the Weimaraners, a lot of people give him a bad rap. I don't do that. As you well know, I'm an equal opportunity bird dog guy. Is there anything unique about the Weimaraner breed that you think makes puppies slightly different than, say, a short hair or a setter or something like that?
I think they're more susceptible to separation anxiety than any bird dog I've run into. Just stronger. They just do not, they just got to be with you. There's so much, there's a reason they're nicknamed Velcro dogs. They really got to be with you. And so many of them, if they don't know what to do, if they're left alone, they just start tearing stuff up.
Yeah, that's, you know, the guy who lost the curtains, the carpet, and the bathroom floor is the guy who invented dog crates.
Well, I found it's much easier to have two than one.
Dogs?
Yeah, two or more.
Yeah, do you really think that helps a lot in that area?
I do. I think that as long as they get along.
Yeah.
My oldest one here, when I brought him home as a pup, he was a rescue. When I brought him home, my Weimaraner back then hated him, and he hated him for 2 years. And I think that hate extended my old dog's life 2 years just because he wanted to keep living, just to hate the puppy.
I guess that's a good enough reason, I guess.
I mean, there was no love lost there, but yeah. It's totally the opposite with these two. I've got an old dog, they're like inseparable brothers. So you never know how it's going to work, but I still think it's so much easier. And in some ways, when they get out in the field, it's weird how they'll start to work together.
And they will.
And a pup will start talking to an adult.
Yeah. Now, I saw them both work together, didn't I, out there at Kansas when we were there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I thought so. At least secondhand in the editing suite. I don't remember exactly, but... What is the first thing you try to do when you bring a puppy home? Introduce him to the other dog?
Definitely. When I brought this little pup home, it was he was 7 weeks old, and I put him down on the floor, and I knew how gentle my big dog was. He came up and sniffed him and walked away. He wouldn't have one thing to do with that dog for a week and a half. With that puppy, he wouldn't go near him. And then all of a sudden, in 3 weeks, they were playing together. So you never know how it's going to work. But you introduce them immediately and make sure you're. And I always find that no matter how wonderful that puppy is, you better spend a lot more time with your old dog.
Yeah, you know there is that, and there are a lot
make sure
of ways
they understand that they're still top of the pecking order.
Absolutely. Good advice there, that's for sure. Lance, always great to talk with you. I'll leave it at that. Remember, there is a top dog, and it's not the new one. We'll talk to you again down the road. Thanks for being part of the Upland Nation.
All right. Have a wonderful day, Scott. Bye.
Puppies of all descriptions, all sizes, all colors, all ages. Yeah, I got a German puppy that's 3 years old. John, welcome to the podcast. How old is your puppy?
He will be a year old this month, end of the month here.
Yow. So tell me, what's the adventure been like?
It's been quite the venture. From puppy to, even now, he's still puppy mode, but it's been fun.
What has been the highlight of the first year of your dog's life with you?
Well, I guess watching him, evolve, into where he's at now and working with him, just to watch him, I guess.
Yeah. What breed?
Short hair, German short hair.
Okay. And so when you say watching him evolve, are you working hard on the training for bird hunting thing?
Yeah, working with him hard. Well, not real hard, but working with him when he wants to do it and not forcing it on him.
Well, that's an interesting way to look at it. So what do you do? Do you wait till he puts his paw up and says, I'm ready to go to school now, or what?
No, I just, you can only work with them for so long.
Okay.
Before they don't want to, before they lose interest.
Yeah.
So they, as a pup, I don't know, I guess. That's the way that's how I read them, I guess.
Well, that makes all the sense in the world. Most of us probably overtrain. I have a good friend who's an animal behaviorist, and one day he said, now, don't ever be a greedy owner. And I said, what are you talking about? He explained basically what I think you're alluding to, and that is after the first couple good renditions of whatever it is you're working on with your dog in training, the rest of it, you're just showing off. And right. And when you start showing off, that means the dog's going to start phoning it in, and all of a sudden you're probably going to go downhill.
Okay.
So what is the biggest item on your agenda right now in the training world?
Just working with the wings with him and well, both of them, I guess.
Yep. You got any live birds to work with him on?
I will be getting some, yeah. Great. But I've gotten one that we both shot here last year, and he couldn't really clean him. There wasn't much to clean, so. So I put that in the freezer, and you've been using that.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And what has been the biggest surprise for your one-year-old short hair? What has he done that's kind of made you slap your forehead?
Yeah, I guess the jumping up on you. that's been the biggest issue, I guess. But I think a lot of it's got to do with being excited, you know, to be out going, you know.
Yeah, I do.
I've never, you know, he's the only one that's ever done that. The other one, she's never done that.
You know, I think some dogs are jumper uppers and some aren't. I've had the same experience. I bet two or three of mine are like that, but one or two were not. And it was like everything else, like a dog's range or their style or anything else, probably. So right. tell me, did you pick this dog up nearby from a breeder you knew, or did you have it flown in, or how'd you get your puppy?
Well, I had one, and she's up there, and then I'm talking to my boy and mentioned, well, it should be nice to get another short here, and then I got another one to run, you know, and then have one lost. Well, Lord behold, he brought one home. He said, here, Dad. he said, early Christmas present, so.
I love it. So you didn't even have to agonize over the picking and the shopping and all of that. It just showed up.
I think Dustin, my boy, he's the one that he picked him out.
Oh, nice. It sounds like it worked out okay, though.
Oh yeah, good. It worked out really good. Yeah.
What's your goal for this hunting season with the dog? You got anything in particular you want to accomplish?
Nope, just have a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
And hopefully everything works out good. Just listen to him, and you know, just do it. You know, pay attention to what he's doing, and I've learned a lot from, you know, watching other dogs. You know, a lot of people and myself, I've trained myself not to. You know, you got to watch the dog and let them show you where they're at.
Yeah,
and assume where they're at.
There's so much truth to that. I wrote a book about it. But you're absolutely right. I wish more people would pay more attention to what their dogs are doing and trying to tell them. And you're going to be a great owner. You obviously already are. You're going to do great. I'm really excited for you. Appreciate your being a part of the Upland Nation podcast, John. Thanks for being on the program.
Thank you.
So I'm Scott Linden, the host, and on the other end of the line, he's coping with a little puppy right now. Chris, thanks for being a part of the Upland Nation podcast. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Glad to hear it. And I'm smiling. Maybe people can hear that. But how old is your little guy?
Well, he's almost 7 months.
Okay. And
he's not little yet.
No, but mentally he's still way puppy.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
What's the breed?
Well, he's a mixed breed actually. He's his mother was a Labradoodle and his dad was a Border Collie.
Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah. When I chose him, I wasn't so much on breed. My daughter had a friend at work that had her Labradoodle and Border Collie had puppies. And she said they were really, really smart. I was actually looking for a lab, not just to, I don't need anything real fancy. I mean, I don't need one that does trials or anything like that. I just need one to get ducks out of the farm pond. we're talking about the pond's not 30 yards across but the bottom is very, very muddy, and you can't hardly wade out to get them. You can't hardly. So I just needed something to, you know, to go after them.
How are you feeling about that now? He's 7 months old. Do you think he's got potential?
Oh my gosh, he's almost too smart is the biggest problem with him. And somebody had told me they, you know, when I got it, of course, you know, poodles and labs both, it's in their instinct. They, yeah, you know, that's as natural to them as walking. I wasn't sure about the border collie, but I was talking to somebody that a trainer, and they said, well, you know, it might actually be in your favor. And I thought, why? And they said, well, they said, sometimes labs can tend to be just a little bit late on the lazy side. They said, border collies, though, never stop. And we found that out.
Yeah, the hard way.
Oh my gosh. He wears, my wife's been working from home since the pandemic started, and he wears her out. He'll bring her a ball or one of his dummies, and she'll throw it to the other end of the living room, and he brings it back, and he'll stand there and he'll pick it up and drop it until she picks it up and throws it again. And she said sometimes he goes for 2-3 hours straight.
Well, that's
nonstop.
That sounds like Labrador. So yeah, good for you. And
he wears us out, but he's reached that point now to where, I guess you'd call it the teenage years.
Yeah.
He's getting to where he'll do what you tell him to do, but he wants to do it on his his rules. Or one of the real hard parts we've had with him is getting him to steady.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's got that prey drive and overdrive, and he wants to see if he can beat it down there when you throw.
Yeah, well, you know, he's still a puppy,
and that's what we have to remember.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk. We've had a lot of talk today about expectations, and yeah. I had to write a story once for Outdoor Life magazine about a puppy's first year. and the editor wanted me to say, on this month he should be doing this, and this month he should be doing this, and I said, I can't do that. Let me call it a puppy's first year or so, and put some big margins in there, and we arrived at a consensus on that. But it sounds like he's got all the raw materials.
Yeah, he is. He's really, really smart. He picks up on stuff fast, and we try to incorporate a lot of his training just in everyday things.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just standard now. When I put his food in his dish when we feed him, he sits there quietly and peacefully, and we give him raw canned pumpkin.
Yeah.
And he won't touch his food until we put the pumpkin in there and say, go ahead and eat. And sometimes he'll sit there for a minute or more waiting for us to put the pumpkin in his dish and say, okay, eat. And when I give him treats in the evening, sometimes I like to do little games with him. Like I'll get 3 or 4 treats out, and I'll place them at different spots in the room. And then I'll have him come to the center of the room and sit. And then just at random, I'll point at one of them and say, okay, you can go get that one. And so he'll go get that one, and then I'll bring him back to see it. I say, okay, now you go get this one, and point. And, you know, I'm trying to get him to learn hand signals as to, you know, go left, go right, farther on, come back, you know, to where I can kind of point and send him, you know, in a certain direction.
Chris, you're doing a great job. I'm really intrigued, not only with that, but you know, that's impulse control as well. That's going to show itself in steadiness as long as the dog just keeps getting more and more mature. It sounds great.
And he is real, real good about taking direction. Of course, when I went to pick him up, one of the things I looked for is that he was already fetching at that point.
Yeah.
And they said he had just watched his mama doing it and had picked it up. And I mean, he was really fetching good at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the other things I looked for is that there was only two in that litter. It was her first litter. His brother would come and let you pet him a while, and then he'd go off and do his own thing. Stoger wanted to be right there next to you all the time. He's very, very submissive, and he wanted to be right there with you all the time. He wouldn't wander off. He wouldn't, if you got up and moved somewhere, he was right on your heels. And that was one of the things that I really wanted.
Yeah.
That connection and that, you know, wanting to be right there with you.
And do you find now that that translates to him wanting to do good work for you, if you will?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, very much so. He is very, very eager to please.
Yeah.
He gets very upset if he even thinks that I'm mad at him or something like that. And my wife says that, like, if I go somewhere and don't take him with me, she said he pouts.
Yeah.
He gets upset and pouts. And we do. I try to do a lot of, just socializing with him and stuff. And some of the old timers have fussed at me about it. But, you know, we take him with us when we go down to eat and go by a Dairy Queen and get him a pup cup, you know. And they're like, you can't feed that dog ice cream and expect it to be a hunting dog. And I'm like, well, you know, I think it's good for him. I mean, you know, getting him out and exposing him to a lot of different things is less chance of him being surprised by something or spooked by something. But, you know, like I said, he listens real, real, and he wants to please. It's like we came out in the backyard the other day and there was two rabbits down here and he started toward them. And I said, no, stop. I said, sit. And he sat down and we watched him for about 5 minutes. And then I asked him if he wanted to run them off. And so he ran down here, run them off, and started after him in the bushes. And I said, stop, come here. And he come right back and sat down next to me and just sat there and stared at the bushes. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, if you can call him off of chasing rabbits.
Yeah, I wouldn't know about that.
That's, you know, but now he is, you can tell that he is really fixated on birds.
How do you do that? How can you tell?
Well, we were walking down he watches them all the time when he's out here in the yard. If they're in the bushes or whatever flying mm-hmm. up on power lines, he'll spot them and he'll sit and just, he'll lock up and just watch them. But we were out walking and we come around the curve in a trail and a squirrel jumped up and a bird flew up off the ground there. And the squirrel went one way and the bird went the other and he took off after the bird. Completely ignored the squirrel.
That almost sounds like an intelligence test that every bird dog ought to take.
Yep.
I love it.
And so, you know, I've been working with him as best I can. Like I said, this is all new to me. And this dog's been he's been a lot of fun though, too. What? I mean, we come up just like his whole name is kind of a play on what he is, you know. My daughter and my wife told me I ought to name him, since I was going to use him as a hunting dog, I needed to name him Winchester or Remington or something like that. And I said, well, you know, those have been played out. Well, I actually shoot a Stoger 3500. And they call that a poor man's Benelli. Uh-huh. So I said, he's my poor man's lab, so I'm going to name him Stoger.
I love it. You have, my friend, you have got the right attitude about dogs and in life. That is so true. But, I love it.
But you know, I think he's going to make what I need.
Yeah.
I got to looking at it and from working with him to become, you know, a retriever to retrieve ducks and everything, you know, it wasn't that far to say, well, you know, I can also work with him maybe, and maybe I could take him to Middle Tennessee and he could jump a few grouse for me or a few mm-hmm. you know, quail. We really don't have a lot of upland game around here. We used to have quite a few grouse, but anymore you go up mountains, you just about can't hardly find one.
Yeah, well, I think he'll do a great job on any upland bird, too. Mm-hmm. It sounds like what he wants to do is be near you. And in the uplands, you know, you want a flushing dog, you want him close to you. So
yeah,
you're on the right track. I only wish everybody in the entire dog owning universe could have heard this conversation. It is uplifting and optimistic. Keep up the good work, Chris. Thanks for being a part.
I did want to give one piece of advice, though, for anybody that gets a new pup.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of companies that make these, but something every new, if you're going to keep them in the house,
yeah,
every new pup owner needs to get them a set of potty bells.
Pardon me?
They're called potty bells. It's basically all, you could even make them. You could go to a craft store and get the stuff and make them.
Okay.
But it is like a piece of ribbon that you hang on your doorknob, and it's got great big jingle bells on it.
Okay. Yeah. And
you start them out from the very day you bring them home. When you take them out to potty, take their paw and ring the bells. It won't take, but just some of them, it doesn't take, but just a few days. Now, every time he needs to go outside, he goes over and rings the bells. And it pretty much doesn't matter where you are in the house. My wife will say, your dog's ringing the bells.
I love it.
And we know he needs to go outside.
That really
helps a lot with accidents.
And now all you got to do is turn them how to open the door.
Yeah.
Chris.
But I mean, it helps a lot with accidents.
Oh, way to go. And you know, I have heard of variations on that, and I'm sure it works. I wish I'd thought of it about 3 years ago, but good job. Keep up the good work. Thanks for being part of the Upland Nation.
I appreciated the offer to come on the podcast. It kind of threw me for a loop. I never expected that when I posted that. I was just posting a picture of my pup and
love it. Well, you're doing great, man. Keep us posted on how your dog does.
I will.
All right. Bye-bye.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Bye.
Talk about ending on a high note. Last caller. I don't know what to say. You cannot top that kind of an attitude. And, you know, I don't care if that dog never has papers, and he never will, except toilet paper, maybe, newspaper. But right dog for the right guy, and they got the right attitude, both of them do. Stick around. I've still got This Land Is Your Land, our public access feature, coming up. In the meanwhile, let me remind you, Man's Best Kennel, that's what they call the Gunner Kennels. Learn more about them at gunner.com. Flick's Kennel of Choice. Double walled, extremely safe, 1,200 five-star reviews. Go to the website to find out why. Take a look at some of those testimonials as well while you're there. And don't forget, free shipping on every Gunner kennel. There is financing available, so if you need to protect your dog, don't let cost be the one factor that keeps you away from a Gunner kennel. Some fun things to do on the website as well. Take the Fit Finder quiz. And then try the augmented reality app. If you've got an iPhone, it's kind of cool. You can put your dog and your kennel in various places. And if you need more help than that, they even have an app that will help crowdsource your fit. So you can talk to all your friends with the same dog, same kind of dog at least. And maybe you'll make a friend or two out of that as well. It's all at gunner.com. And at dogtra.com, that's D-O-G-T-R-A, dogtra.com, you can get yourself 10% off anything over $200. Use the discount code SLUN10 and free shipping on anything over $200 as well. The TNB Dual is my collar system of choice for training. I love the vibrate choice as opposed to, say, the stimulation, the electrical part of it, or even the what they call the tone on this collar. It's not the beep, that's the really loud one. This is the quiet one, the tone. Those are the two I use most with Flick, especially on that collar that's on his flank when we're teaching steadiness. I think electric stimulation might be a little bit much for him, but luckily that vibrate function is quite robust and it works great for Flick. He's kind of a softy anyway. All right, so here we go. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty here, including our feature on DIY, do-it-yourself, public land, wild bird hunting. called This Land Is Your Land, and it's brought to you by my new website, findbirdhuntingspots.com. All sorts of great places to go. No, you won't get the latitude and longitude, but you'll get some suggestions about the right places to start. And as a part of all that, my latest article in there is probably hitting home for a lot of people right now. Plan ahead. There are a whole bunch of reasons you need to start thinking now about where you're going, especially if you're taking a long hunting trip this fall. Once again, most of these things I learned the hard way, so you don't have to. No, you don't have to thank me. Just bear these in mind or pick up the list at findbirdhuntingspots.com. Some of the states have a walk-in program that requires reservations. You might have to call. You might have to actually go online. Others, you're going to have to get a hard copy of their hunting atlas, and you have to do that well in advance. And then, let me remind you, in some states, and I'm thinking particularly of South Dakota, Kansas, and Montana, there's an update to that hunting atlas, and it's usually available both online and in a hard copy. And that usually comes out about August 15th or thereabouts. So stay on top of that stuff. You might even need to download an app so that you can carry all of this on your phone as well as your hard copy. South Dakota, of course, allows you to choose 2 5-day hunting periods for your non-resident license. So if you're going to go late that season, you might be able to come back and go early next season. Ditto for Kansas. And before you go, update any of those mobile mapping apps that you might use. And remember, most of the time, those mobile mapping apps will not have the walk-in program properties in their database. They just do not update them fast enough. All of that and more available at the website. Hope to see you there. This announcement brought to you in part by Huron, South Dakota. Hunt HuronSD.com. 124,000 acres of public access all around Beetle County. I'll see you there. And hopefully I'll hear you there, because I am protecting my ears with ESP, electronic shooter's protection hearing devices, hearing protection devices. ESP America is where you learn more about all of their offerings, all 6 different choices. ESPAmerica.com. Do me a big favor. I could really use your help. If you will review or rate the Upland Nation podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or iHeartRadio, or wherever else you get your podcasts, I would be most appreciative. And as a little incentive, once you do that, you're entered in the drawing for a new pointer over and under shotgun. Thank you for that. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all the callers. Great to hear from a lot of you who I haven't talked to in a long time. I hope all of you listeners enjoyed the program. You will tell your friends. You will check in at the Wing Shooting USA and the Upland Nation Facebook pages. Carry on this discussion and any others you like. It's all right there. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Train hard. Hunt easy. I'm Scott Linden. Thank you so much for listening.